KSCU Santa Clara presents Robots Attack. Movies, TV, video games, comic books, tech stuff, news, music. If it is geek, it's on Robots Attack. Participate in the show by commenting on Facebook, tweeting them at RobotsAttackMe, emailing the show robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Now, Robots Attack.
That's right. Welcome to Robots Attack, the one and only Geek Central talk show on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the underground sound. I am Joe, and with me, as always, Caleb.
Hello, everyone.
We got Super Jason.
Yes.
And we got Jen.
Hello.
We are here to rock your geek world with geek stuff.
Yeah, buddy.
That we talk about. So, gentlemen and lady, how was everyone's extended little break from the show?
It was good. Wife and I went up to a wedding in Oregon. So I've said the family I have not seen in too long a time now.
Oh, Oregon? Cool.
Yes. And so that was, yeah, those were good times.
Nice.
Actually, and this weekend we're going to be going up to Stinson Beach. They actually got a rental house up there for a postponed Easter celebration with them as well. Different side of the family.
Fun stuff.
Cool.
Indeed.
Cool.
Are you meeting anybody named Barney over there? Or?
No, but I'll let you know if I do bump into somebody named Barney.
Okay, cool.
And if he's wearing a suit. And if he's not, I'll tell him, suit up.
Suit up, yes.
Nice. How about you guys?
I got introduced to a new show. Well, it's not new. It's been around for about 2 or 3 years, I think, but it's on Netflix.
Which one is that?
It's called Lost Girl.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's about a woman who didn't know what she was growing up, and then she finds out she's a succubus.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'm not giving anything away. That's the first episode, you know? But, yeah, and then you find out there's this whole, like, fey people are walking among us, and you must choose a side. And she's like, psh, I ain't gonna choose a side. And then, yeah.
Things go downhill from there.
Yeah. It's fun stuff. The writing and stuff sort of gets better along, because like the first episode it was like, I want to enjoy this more than I actually am, but then it gets better, and I'm on episode like 7 or so, and it's like, this is much better. I am happier now.
That's good. And it's always when your shows improve as they go along.
Yes. All right, Super Jason.
I haven't done all that much extra interesting. I grabbed the Tomb Raider game and played it a little bit, rented it, and I was actually really impressed and had a lot of fun.
Yeah. I got to play a little bit of that also. That is an astonishingly good game. Well, not that it's not so astonishing, but it's a really, really good game. I guess it catches me off guard, like how much...
Well,
like,
when you compare it to the originals, it's astonishing.
Well, to the sequels... The first two games were all right for what they were. They were kind of, you know, tomb hunting, puzzle solving, and then it kind of lost its way for a while for some of those later ones.
Okay.
But,
did you actually play all of them, or?
Not all of them. I played some of the first one, a fair amount of the second, and then after that it seemed like it was like, nah, not interested in the way the story of this one. It started to get a little off the rails, in my opinion.
Yeah, I ended up reading some interesting articles about the game too, and it was, somebody pointed out that, well, when you've basically done every single archaeological thing, that there is and made up like an extra few on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
That...
You end up with the crystal skull.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
let us never
and
speak
one of
that
the storylines sounded strikingly like the crystal skull too. And anyway, so you almost have to restart it. So it was a good mm-hmm. opportunity for him.
Agreed.
Yeah.
So okay. How about you, Joe?
I saw G.I. Joe Retaliation. If you take an episode of G.I. Joe, give it a gigantic budget, obviously make it live action, you'd have G.I. Joe Retaliation. It's incredibly silly, but it's like an episode of G.I. Joe. So,
yeah. it's a good bad?
It's fun, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Cool.
Alrighty.
I kept hoping it would be like that because the first one was sort of almost that, and then it didn't quite get there, in my opinion.
Exactly. All right, well, before we get to the new releases of the week, I'm going to have Jen read our first PSA.
Woohoo! I've missed these. It's been a week, or 2 weeks now. Learn how to identify interesting bird species that live in the Guadalupe River Park.
No.
Oh.
Stop it.
On an outdoor excursion led by avid birder Ralph... Oh, dear. Sharded? Sorry if I got that wrong. Saturday, April 20th, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. For more information or to sign up, visit www.grpg.org or you can call 408-298-7657.
Nice. All right. Coming out in the theaters this week, we have probably the biggest one, Evil Dead, the remake.
Woo!
It's coming out. We also have, for those who never experienced Jurassic Park or want to see it in 3D, you got that. We've got Lotus Eaters, No Place on Earth, Eddie the Sleepwalking Cannibal.
Isn't that just a zombie?
Probably. Down the Shore.
Good point.
Yeah, those are your movies of the week.
Wow.
Some listing of them.
A stirring collection there. Let's see. If those didn't quite do it for you, how about that's not the correct list. All right, here's the correct list. Bounty Hunters on Blu-ray. It's already out on DVD, featuring WWE star Trisha Stratus.
Wow.
Yeah. The reviews were sort of mixed, but more positive. If that's not quite your speed, how about Dirk Gently? It's
say that again.
Dirk Gently.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. It's a detective story as written by Douglas Adams.
Ooh.
Then also there's a John Dies at the End on Blu-ray and DVD.
Oh, you gave it away.
Yeah, the title of the movie gives it away, unfortunately.
Oh, sorry.
If you have a hankering for a little bit of Marvel in your life, the Marvel Cinematic Universe Phase 1 Avengers Assembled, the Blu-ray collection is out. It's a collection of the first 6 films, including The Incredible Hulk. And the cool thing about it is that it comes in a S.H.I.E.L.D.-branded plastic box that looks like the Tesseract box. And it has actually a little Tesseract cube in it. It's
nice.
Kind of the coolest part about it, besides the Blu-rays. And it has a special bonus disc. Then there is The Sweeney on Blu-ray and DVD, not to be confused with Sweeney Todd.
Okay.
This isn't about a elite police task force, and
definitely not Sweeney Todd.
Definitely not Sweeney Todd, and there's no singing, as far as I know.
Okay,
might be improved by singing.
I would, hard to say. I'm gonna round out this list with White Elephant on DVD. It takes place in the slums of Buenos Aires.
Alrighty, well, from DVDs and Blu-rays to video games, we have Defiance. Yes, the sci-fi television show. This is the video game for it that ties in with it. It's an MMO for consoles. We've got Cities in Motion 2 for the PC. Ninja Gaiden 3 Razor's Edge for PlayStation 3. I think this is like the third version of this game or something, so you can look up the rest and decide for yourself. Dropping on arcade, we have Battle Block Theater. From the same makers of Castle Crashers.
Yes.
We also have Double Dragon 2, Wander of the Dragons. Let's see. Anything
You're
else?
Welcome.
Ooh, Super Black Bass 3D for the 3DS.
Uh-huh.
We had a for Borderlands 2, they dropped the Ultimate Vault Hunter upgrade pack, which upped the level cap and played some music in the background for your game. Let's see. Anything else worth mentioning? Real Heroes Firefighter 3D for the 3DS. There you go.
Alrighty. Sorry. From there, we I was so astonished by that. Yeah. Left me speechless. But I'm now speaking about comics. Over on DC side, there is Action Comics number 19. It's a new creative team, possibly new life for the title. Phantom Stranger number 7. Someone check out the Phantom Stranger? Over on Marvel, it's Thanos Rising number 1. It looks like it's going to be lead up to Avengers 2. Indestructible Hulk number 6. Hulk versus Frost Giants in Jotunheim. Kind of cool. Huh. Over on the indie side is 68 Jungle Gem number 1. It's a look at the Vietnam War. Polarity number 1, written or sort of creative minded by Max Bemis of Say Anything. Then there's Abe Sapien, Dark and Terrible number 1. And Battle Angel Alita, The Last Order Omnibus. Volume 1, I believe. There might be more than one of those. So there you go. That's
cool. Exciting stuff.
Comics for the time being.
Alrighty, well, there you have the new releases of the week. We're going to take a music break, but before that, let me tell you what the rest of the show is going to be about. In the core, we're going to discuss some of our favorite heroes.
Yes.
Before that, in our game discussion, we'll hit up some of the games that dropped this week. As well as maybe some others if we have time. In Caleb's Corner, what do we have for Caleb's Corner?
Caleb's Corner has to do with redesigning the way female characters are drawn.
Alrighty. And, of course, in the news, what do we have to tease the folks?
Sad news. LucasArts is no more.
All right, there's your entire news story right there.
No, there's more to it than that. That's kind of interesting.
Modern technology affecting hot dogs.
All right.
The humble hot dog. Interesting.
Is it really made of dog? We'll find out after this music break. All right. We are Robots Attack. Oh, actually, you know what? Tell them how they can participate on the show.
That's right. It's early in the show. If you want to get your voice into the show, please contact us. We are on Facebook. Do a search for Robots Attack, 2 words. A few more likes, maybe get a better URL, which we can give out. Then on Twitter, we are Robots Attack Me. And finally, you can find us on email at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. And if all that's just a little bit too much to remember all at once, you can always find us at robotsattack.me. It has past episodes and current on all of the links and show notes to things that we discuss. Please get in contact with us. We want to participate with you, with us, make this show even more awesome than it is already.
That is right. All right, let's take that music break. I'm going to play a track from the artist Hot Nun. Who Do You Think You Are from the album Hot Nun. All right, we are Robots Attack.
News.
And leading off, we have unfortunate news. Disney is going to close down LucasArts, which is the game division of Lucasfilm.
For why?
Well, because LucasArts really hasn't developed a good game in a fair number of years now, and
for why?
Neither Disney nor Lucas have made a very good game for a while now, quite honestly, so they're just like, because they also closed down Junction Point, which was the team that made the Epic Mickey games.
Hey, what about Pirates, Lego Pirates? What was that about? That's awesome.
That's done by the Legos, Legos development.
Right.
They did say that there is hope for some of the game's continued survival as franchise or license, I should say. So although Star Wars 1313 is currently on hiatus, or it's currently in a state of not being right now, there is a chance it could get revived by some other team that isn't Lucas Arts.
Yeah. Hmm. don't Don't keep your hopes very high, though.
Yeah, don't get your hopes up. But if that kind of bummed you out, all is not lost. I think it's kind of a follow-up from, I found over in Ars Technica. The game developer Raven, who did the Jedi Outcast and Jedi Academy games, is releasing the solo player campaign for those games as open source projects. So you can go out, download them, and play them again. And the community now has access to the code and how it was made. So if they want to actually expand them, there is a potential for that as well. So all is not completely lost. That is not all grim and dark, but it is a little sad. We salute you, LucasArts.
Yeah. I was really looking forward to 1313.
Yeah. I was actually kind of surprised that they canceled 1313. It's like, cause that one has like potential, unlike some of the other titles that they've been trying to push on us for a while now, but yeah, oh well, so it goes sometimes. Jason?
Well, I promised a hot dog story. It turns out a little company has made something kind of weird. I don't know if you've ever had this problem where you want to put hot dog on a salad.
Okay, go on. I'll catch up.
Or a similar thing. And you need, like, perfectly diced hot dog.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it's a pain in the butt to actually dice hot dog by hand, and it doesn't really feel all that great doing it either.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, anyway,
go
so
on.
this company, it put together a handy little machine that guillotines perfectly diced hot dog.
Interesting. So wait, is it like a tube with wires, or is it actually like slice it?
If you've ever seen the old little things for dicing eggs.
Okay.
Same thing, except for hot dogs. Huh. Okay. So incredibly new modern technology, just hitting the scene right now.
Behold, you've never seen this one before. You put a hot dog on one side, just pull it down, and boom, you now have sliced hot dog.
Right.
Does it make julienne fries?
It will julienne your hot dogs.
Hey. That's something, I guess. Unfortunately, half of that.
Yeah, there's no wavy cuts or anything like that, unfortunately. I want a wavy cut hot dog, personally.
Yeah, it's just not the same without the wavy cut.
But yeah, if you're really super interested in obtaining one of these, we'll have your opportunity on our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Oh, sorry. I misunderstood the gesture. Do you love going to shows? Then keep your radio tuned here to 103.3 FM because we're always giving tickets away. Check our website at kscu.org and go to our events page to see which shows we have tickets for.
All right. Speaking of sort of events, I'll try to make this a segue kind of. Microsoft is beginning a Kudo Challenge game design competition for children and teens. They've launched a new section of its Imagine Cup technology competition, the Kudo Challenge, a contest encouraging young children and teens to build their own video games using Kodu visual programming software, reports Forbes. Kodu is a simple program that empowers users to build their own games using its tools, adding elements like interactive and static objects, gameplay mechanics, and scoring systems. Software tools also include a terrain editor, bridge, and path builder, and 20 different characters with unique abilities to populate the world with. The software is free on PC and $5 through the Xbox Live Marketplace, and both versions allow use of the Xbox controller in both building and gameplay input.
This sounds kind of awesome.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool that they're getting kids to sort of do their own little Minecrafts and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Since that is like the hugest game.
It's quite popular.
Yeah. let's see. The first Kudo competition will challenge participants to create interactive stories under the theme Water and People. Finalists will be sent all...
Watering people?
No, water and people. Okay. Finalists will be sent all expenses paid to the finals in St. Petersburg, Russia.
Ooh.
Maybe they'll get to meet Shootin' Putin.
Hey, there you go.
Other prizes include cash and grants. That's cool.
Yeah.
So, if you're interested, sort of like Super Jason mentioned, we have the links to all of our stories on our Facebook page. But yeah, if you know a young child or teen that would be interested in that, I think it's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, cool stuff.
I wish they had this sort of stuff when I was a little lad.
Yeah. We tried making our own games like years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember trying to do that back with the old coding. That was not fun.
No, it wasn't. Let's see. So that jump bounces it over to me, and I'm going to mentioning that if you remember, anyone remember the rumors of Facebook making a phone?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Well, they've actually done it. They have,
goodness.
And it's more of an app than an actual phone per se.
Okay.
So like, what it is they have taken the Android system and they've made basically a brand new skin for it that's all about Facebook. When you're on your lock screen, you'll actually see your friends' posts and images and stuff there, and you can interact with that. Tap it to leave a comment or whatever without having to actually unlock your phone, go into an app, and do something.
Oh, okay.
So
I thought I'd actually heard that HTC was going to release.
HTC is the manufacturer of the phone.
Oh, okay. So you can get it separately?
Yes. The app is called Facebook Home, and they're going to release it to the Google Play Store.
Okay.
Point of note here. If you do install this app, make sure it's what you really want to do, because it will completely reskin your phone.
Okay.
It's going to replace the interface with Facebook Home.
When you buy
the phone from HTC that has it already, that's how it is. But if you add this to your phone,
to your existing
phone, it will change it into.
Okay.
Facebook Home. All of your apps and stuff will still exist. Nothing's going to be erased per se, but the way you access it, interact with it, will fundamentally be shifted to the Facebook Home system.
Huh.
Which isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's just something to be aware of before you go into it, because unless you back up and restore, it won't be easy to go back to that.
Huh.
So that's just sort of a
that's good to
heads
know.
Up.
Yeah.
But All things considered, the app actually looks kind of cool. They have one of the cooler things that they have added is they're calling it. What is it called? The face or heads chat system, where like instead of having like a text icon, it's the actual picture of the person's face. They pull it from the Facebook page, and so you can actually see. Like,
assuming they put their face on it.
Yeah. Assuming they
which I've never actually done.
But like, you know, generally if it's the person, it'll be like their face, so you actually can see, oh, it is my friend whoever. I actually do want to see what they're saying, or no, I don't really care. You can swipe it down to like read more, swipe up to like take that one away. I don't really care about that. So it's also SMS and chat and Facebook chat will both be funneled through this notification system. So
okay.
So that's kind of neat.
Interesting.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Well, I had a story that was, at first, I believed a dream come true.
Oh, okay.
I've been looking for the perfect stylus for an Android type of phone for a while now, and I've been hoping for a lot of these Kickstarter projects to create something that would completely blow my mind. And then other products came out that just included as part of the product that I might have to do in the long run. But Wacom, the people who made me genuinely want an absolutely awesome stylus.
To begin with, right?
Wacom, woo!
Or Wacom, I guess.
Wacom, yeah.
And I always call it Wacom. I like it better that way for some reason. Because it's way cool.
I see what you did there.
I am amazingly clever like that. No, they actually created a stylus for your regular phone. Unfortunately, it's basically just like all of the other like quick styluses that everybody's put out there, except it is branded their way. So it has a replaceable nib on it. So that's kind of a nice little option, but it's still kind of a big puffy thing at the end of a metal tube.
Yeah.
And the thing that's kind of cool about it and sort of weird about it is that it's made to be tethered directly to your phone. So it's really small. It's like an extra little key fob or something like that.
Oh, okay.
So it looks like a miniature crayon. But still, it's really cool that they're at least trying to get their stuff out into that market, and hopefully the next generation of it will be exactly what
I want. The one you're looking for.
is it pressure sensitive?
No, that's the thing. It's exactly like every other stylus out there. It's just the little spongy thing at the end of a metal tube.
Bummer.
Well, yeah.
It is kind of neat, though, that it's like you stick the one end of it into the headphone port of your phone, so that way it's never really lost. That's kind of neat.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, the illustration that I'm looking at right here, I'm not sure it's supposed to be the headphone port. I think it might be some of them have the little key.
Oh, okay.
Anyway.
Little charm spot.
But unfortunately, this article does not provide all of the details that I'd like to know about it, including that right there. But I'll try and get you as much extra information about that as possible.
Cool.
Nice. Well, my next story, I chose this one because it fits the end of an era in video games. Sort of like the LucasArts ending.
Dun, dun, dun.
No more DLC for Rock Band. This was the last week. Dropped the final song. And so there was a little story that Harmonix put out. Quote, "It was totally insane to expect people to drop $150 on a video game," Harmonix recounts, "as it releases a video in tribute of its final Rock Band DLC release. And yet, not only did millions of people join in the Rock Band craze, they bought DLC, lots of it. According to new stats released by Harmonix, there were 130 million songs downloaded through Rock Band."
Oh, wow.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Over 281 weeks, the Rock Band library expanded by 4,246, thanks to the combined efforts of Harmonix and the user-supported Rock Band network.
Huh.
Quote, "There were tons of people who told me they learned how to play guitar, drums, and piano because of our game," another employee states in the video. With 338 pro tracks available in Rock Band 3, Rocksmith has a long way to go before it will be able to catch up. That's the other sort of music game that's out. That's
it's
geared a little more
learning one.
Yeah, it's geared a little more towards the actual learning process of it. But yeah, I thought, because I definitely bought a lot of songs and definitely loved playing Rock Band over the years. So in a way, it's sad to see that it stopped, but it's very impressive that they kept it going for as long as they did.
Rock Band.
Many hours of enjoyment.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, if you want to see the video, like I mentioned with the other stories, I'll post the link to the article, and it has the video in it with them going over it. So
that's really impressive, though. Like, they got that much like extra content out of those games, and each one progressively better. It's sort of awesome.
Yeah.
Alrighty, so Is that it for news for this week?
That's all I got.
Okay. So, Jen, I believe that makes it your turn?
Absolutely. Today in history. All right. So, let's see what we got here. What with the Facebook thing, I think that ties in well. Because today, your cell phone turns 40.
40?
What?
Yeah.
What?
Today.
Hopefully not your specific cell phone.
Yeah, hopefully.
if your cell phone actually turned 40, that's an impressive piece of holding on to technology there.
Today, 40 years ago, the VP of Motorola, Martin Cooper, made the very first cell phone call.
Wow.
Yeah, so if you haven't already, make a phone call and, do a little salute there.
Or send a text if that's more your thing.
No, that's not part of it.
Oh, right. Call.
Yeah,
use your voice.
In 1983, Challenger's first mission was launched today as well.
Oh, wow.
Huh.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Very
cool.
And
then if you haven't heard already, somebody passed away. That was Roger Ebert.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been all over the interwebs if you haven't seen it already, but, you know, two thumbs up wherever you are, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You'll be missed. And today's birthday, somebody's birthday.
Oh, whose birthday? Whose birthday?
It is Robert Downey Jr.'s birthday.
Awesome.
Oh. I thought you were going to say Roger Ebert.
Irony there.
Go home and watch Iron Man. Swoon.
Other random fact, today is also Grumpy Cat's birthday.
Oh, that's right. I saw that on Facebook. I forgot.
Oh, okay. Oh, so that's why that picture was there. Okay.
Yes.
I had a birthday, but
I had a birthday once. It was terrible. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Grumpy Cat's birthday is today. There you go.
Did it say how old Grumpy Cat turned?
The picture did not say.
I believe it's one, actually.
I have to go research that a little bit.
I think that's true.
Is that in cat years or human years or transdimensional years?
Humano cat.
Maybe it's is it in Time Lord years?
It's funny. The owners say he's actually a very sweet cat, but that face says otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have seen the Friskies little web series, like Will. A certain cat play with it, I think it is. Well, they did a celebrity version of it that it's Grumpy Cat. Will it play with different things? So far, Grumpy Cat has played with nothing.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, happy unbirthday. Aw.
Well, since that was brought up, we might as well have Jen, read this PSA before we get to another music break.
Sounds good to me.
No, maybe it is.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you like Grumpy Cat, you probably like cats, right? So you must be an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes, but have limited time to volunteer? Join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving foster and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. With your help, we could save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share your stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join us at sjanimaladvocates.org or look for us on Facebook.
Alrighty, if you are just joining us, we are Robots Attack, the one and only Geek Center talk show on KSU Santa Clara. We're going to take a quick music break after wrapping up the news, and we're going to come back with Caleb's Corner. Would you like to tease the folks again what it was, just in case they're just tuning in now?
This has to do with the way the female hero is represented in comic books.
Alrighty. I look forward to that discussion after this music break from a band, Warm Soda, the track Violet Blue from the album Someone for You. Alrighty, we are Robots Attack.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at Robots Attack Me. Email them at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at robotsattack.me.
And now, it's time for Caleb's Corner.
That's right. This is my portion of the show where I get to talk about something I feel something for, feel something about. And this time it's the, it's a thread that's been touched on before, but it's the depiction of women in media and how they're represented, and specifically in comic books. Because if anyone's picked up a comic book over in the last, you know, 10 or so years or even longer, they will have noticed a certain trend in the costuming of the female hero that is revealing, to put it mildly. Some more so than others. And there's been an occasional attempts. There have been several. There's a lot of artists that are kind of, you know, pushing against some of these trends, making their heroes look a little different, their costumes seem a little more reasonable. Then there's others that just sort of kind of go whole hog and just push it as far as they can in some ways. And today I found a collection of redesigned superheroes that were over on Geek Native. I'll put the link up right now, where they took some of the more famous scantily redone costumes and redid them in a much more reasonable fashion. I thought a lot of them were kind of neat.
Yeah, I looked at that list. I there's one though that I'm like, Wonder Woman with the khaki pants. That's dumb.
That one I think is the weakest of the lot. Yeah. I definitely agree with you there.
I did like the armor she was wearing.
Yeah, the top is fine, but yeah, as soon as you see the khaki pants, like
you can't unsee them.
Yeah. Yeah, but it just kind of I thought it was a nice representation of the fact that it doesn't have to be skanky to be good. And to that end, I also bring up the hilarious Hawkeye Initiative website. The Hawkeye Initiative started off as sort of a gag. Someone just started.
It's not a gag anymore.
Started off as one person's gag.
Oh, okay, there we go.
And they redrew female comic book poses as if they were Hawkeye in these poses, and similarly provocative ways. And it kind of just highlights some of the ridiculousness that is some of these art styles, and it just find it a really great way to kind of pointing out how silly some of it is.
Yeah, because some of it just becomes even like you just see it and accept it. You don't even realize how ridiculous it is until you put a man in that situation. You're like, wait, where's his spine?
Yeah,
he shouldn't be able to turn that way. But you see it, and the woman's like, yeah, that's just how they draw them. What's the big deal? Oh no, where's his spine?
Yeah.
So what do you think is going to get to change this sort of thing?
Part of it will be, I think,
maybe first question.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think they did it in the first place?
Which one? The provocative drawings or?
Yeah. Well, that started the whole thing. Like,
I suspect it came out of just an intention, like, drawing attractive women is not exactly a bad thing. It's not an unfun thing. And I think it started off fairly, it's not quite necessarily like, I think it was intended originally just sort of to be like, it was a costume. It wasn't like this person's identity, so to speak. And mm-hmm. It wasn't like all that they were. And most of the original, like, quote unquote, sexy costumes were relatively tame. It was like a skirt and a mask and a somewhat reasonable costume. And as it has progressed and other people have made their own variations, their own riffs on it, it started to skew and push towards a different direction. And as they were targeting a certain type of audience, classically the 13 to 19 year old
mm-hmm.
male, that has sort of skewed the way some people like drew their characters, and it kind of pushed things a certain way. And you know, like, and I think it's been a pendulum thing. Like they've pushed it over way over here to the almost ridiculously too sexy side. And now it's going to swing back to somewhat more reasonable. And then it's going to be kind of, you know, it'll be the typical swing that goes through, you know, just movements and art and society and people and everything like that. And, mm-hmm. and I think, as we raise, like, I think the Hawkeye Initiative is actually pretty good for this, because it raises the awareness of how ridiculous, how sexist some of this artwork is. Not that the people that are drawing them are bad or anything like that. It's just that there's the certain underlying inequality of representation of male and female characters.
I just have to say I'm changing the wallpaper on my phone, which I drew myself. Right now. No, really, I'm not. I'm keeping that.
And like I said, like, there's nothing inherently wrong with it. I think, and like, And like for some characters and some storylines, that's sort of the joke of the character itself is to be represented this way, or some like that's sort of the character's thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that I'm not saying that's necessarily the best, but it's like it's kind of like, well, that's sort of how that one works, but it doesn't mean that they all have to be like that. And that's the larger issue is that it seems like so many of them fall into this category of you would not go out into daylight wearing these clothes unless you were planning to be soon receding from daylight after wearing going out into daylight with those clothes or the lack thereof. So it's kind of trying to represent a character that is, it can be attractive and strong without having necessarily make them look like they're
just show skin and stuff.
Yeah. I think it's good that there's a lot more, I think in the independent comic rise, like the popularity that a lot of them are having is also kind of helping this along, because it's showing alternative ways of representing a character in general, not just a comic book female, but just characters as they are. Mm-hmm. Like the guys aren't like necessarily all, you know, looking like they came off of Muscle magazine, and the girls aren't looking like they came out of Playboy. You know, it's like it seems to be showing a better middle ground, mm-hmm, that I think both sides can start playing off of.
Feel free. I mean, the question I may have looked at, Caleb, but feel free to respond if you have any thoughts on the topic as well.
Yeah, and things have certainly gotten better. I remember, you know, in the 90s when you looked at, you know, women in comics, they were doing these things where it was the clothes were basically painted on, you know, where it's like, how in the world is that material sticking to the inside of her breasts? And it's something where I sort of didn't even realize they weren't doing anymore until I picked up, you know, like the new Avengers. It's like, oh, wait a second. Look, she's got boobs, and yes, they're there, but they're not, you know, the clothes aren't painted on. They're, you know, there's, yeah,
there's actual, like, it's like someone took cloth and stretched it over
exactly
in the form of a shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, from the redesigns that I linked to, I think my favorite one is the Power Girl one, because her costume has been like notoriously ridiculous, along with her proportions. That set aside, you know, like this, I thought this redesign in particular was one of my favorites, just because it really, I thought, still captured the idea of Power Girl without having to be like a joke. In the costume isn't necessarily a joke.
I think it's interesting though that they kept her proportions the same. Just covered them up.
Yeah. But it's not obvious either. It's like once you look.
No, it's obvious.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with Super Jason. She's built pretty much the same way. It's just they covered up the cleavage and covered up most of the flesh. That looks like that's what they did with most of the stuff. I mean, mm-hmm, I'm not trying to like knock it or anything like that. It just, to me, it looked like, here they are, the way they're drawn, but now, like, kind of fully clothed, and see, it can still be attractive. They don't have to,
mm-hmm,
show skin. So that's sort of how I noticed them. It seemed like,
yeah, it changes the baseline of having to be like, the colorist gets a lot of flesh tone color. It's like, nah, now they actually can, you know, it doesn't have to be all that to be a well-rendered, real attractive female comic character. I thought it was kind of nice to see that someone was actually kind of showing alternatives to classic designs.
Yeah, it'd be interested to get a take from a female like artist, comic artist's, mm-hmm, perspective on it, if how she feels about, you know, how characters are drawn, or you know, if how it can change, all that sort of stuff. If it's just, I mean, mm-hmm, obviously it seemed like they did that kind of stuff because sex sells.
Mm-hmm.
And like you mentioned, the target audience were, for the most part,
young
males. But now that, even though I'm almost certain there were girls that were into that stuff as well, now that they're getting a little more recognition for that,
mm-hmm,
it does seem like there's an opportunity for it to change now that there's more and more getting into the industry, hopefully.
Yeah, from what I've been able to glean from some of the comic blogs is that there is a general upswelling of women being more involved with the industry. So that's good.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was sort of going to comment about how I remember, I don't remember who specifically said it, but it's sort of something that's just been out there, is that now is a good time to be a geek. You know, so you're getting a lot of the main populace coming in. And so that does mean that there's a lot more women in this subculture, even though it's not really a subculture anymore so much, but there's a lot more women involved. And so you're going to see an evolution in that direction, I think.
Yeah.
Because, you know, yeah, you've got the superheroes and you got the girls that are all of a sudden, oh my God, these guys are kind of cool. And maybe I'll like totally check out those comic books because, yeah, this is where they come from, right? So, except hopefully not quite so ditzy, but but yeah, the point is that I think it's because it's become more generally mainstream. You are going to get more women, and so that's where they come from, I think.
Yeah, and I think also there are more girls being more vocal about their appreciation for their comics in general, like because it's, you know, we like comic culture and video game culture by and large have been rather hostile to the inclusion of females for reasons unknown.
Yeah.
And at least I can't figure them out. And I think nowadays, since geek culture has begun to rise in just general acceptance, I think there's more girls that are more women that are being more vocal about it. And therefore it is causing more change and more just sort of general understanding and stuff like that.
Yeah. I would agree.
Comic books, they're not just for greasy boys in their mom's basement anymore.
Nope, they can actually go out into the sunshine and read them now. I mean, no, everybody. The more people we include, I think the more interesting it will become.
I agree.
Yeah. I will say, not sure how exactly to word this, but on the downside, it is kind of sad that, because...
Mm-hmm.
I rather enjoy looking at a beautiful woman. And it's kind of sad that in a way that's been turned into a negative thing. Like,
not in a way, outright.
Yeah, there is a certain amount of, I think what it is there's a certain amount of backlash that's happened because it has been such a strong, overwhelming force that's been moving. It's been like a tidal wave up until this point, and now there's a wave. Now someone's put up a wave break, and because it's been so, this wave has been so powerful for so long, they've had to put up a very tall wall, seawall to stop the wave from crashing over. And I think that will start to come down. It will start to a middle ground will be found, I believe, where there will be an understanding that, you know, you can create characters that are interesting without having to make them look like a certain way, and characters that can look a certain way and it's not a diminishing of them as a character.
No. I mean, I don't think it's ever going to go away completely it never has in anything else, but yeah, I looked at it cause, there's a woman, I believe her name is Megan Marie. Mm-hmm. She works now for Crystal Dynamics. She posted this, blog on her Facebook, on her blog, and then it was on her Facebook page, and she talked about this kind of sort of topic, and I had responded it in a weird way. It kind of seems like the geek culture, for lack of a better word to summarize everything, it's sort of like going through what women went through in the 50s and 60s in the job market. They were looked more upon in a physical way. And not really, because this was like a man's world. This is the men did these jobs, and what are you doing coming in here and doing this? And it's kind of like they're getting some of that backlash. I mean, I'm not trying to compare it completely to that. Obviously, the women that suffered through that era, it's nowhere near exactly the same. But I kind of feel there's some similarities. It seems like for some reason, like you mentioned, you would think this culture would be like the most accepting of all, but for some reason it's not when it comes to certain things.
I sort of disagree with that, just because I think the people who are really nasty to people and to women, they are really loud, and they usually have a really tall stool to shout from.
The internet?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not just that. You talk about the backlash to women being in all of this comic book stuff. Well, a lot of it was from other comic book artists. And so it ended up getting a ton of press because, I mean, here's a famous comic book artist that ends up saying dumb stuff. And so it ends up being repeated over and over again because of that. And so you don't really have the entire culture, like, fighting against women. You have a few jerks.
Very loud jerks.
You should read her story. You'd be surprised, like, the stuff that she's run into. So,
yeah, and I think it sounds like a lot of the I don't know which particular article you're talking about, but the lady that does the feminist frequency and the video game culture analysis videos, like her, she received a whole lot of problems. And there's another website called Fat Dumb or Slutty or something like that. It's kind of about the different abuses that people randomly receive by being engaged with gaming culture. And it's not just gaming culture, unfortunately. There's a lot of other places where it shows up too. And it's kind of this weird undercurrent of misogyny that seems to it's not everyone, but it seems to kind of like ride just below the surface for a lot of them. And it comes out in weird ways and distinctly inappropriate times, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah, I applaud you for bringing up a very interesting topic that we could go on for quite a while, I think.
And you could also go some very heated places. So
yeah,
I'm trying to keep it calm so we can I think it's important to discuss these things.
Certainly, I agree. Yeah.
And we should all try and be as reasonable as possible about this, even though we might have strong feelings about it.
In fact, if you, audience out there,
yes,
have an opinion on this, Caleb, how can they participate?
Well, we will gladly accept your feedback via Facebook. You can do a search for us at Robots. Do a search for Robots Attack. You'll find our page, and we'll interact with you that way. Or you can find us on Twitter. Our handle is Robots Attack Me, and you can also email us robotsattackshow@gmail.com. And finally, there is our website, robotsattack.me. Leave comments on entries. Leave comments. You can find the button that says interact, which has links to Facebook, Twitter, everything else that I've mentioned before. That's all there. Please let us know. Give us your feedback. We want to know what all the rest of you think as well.
Yes, please do. All right. We're going to take another music break and then come back with some game discussions. Fellas and lady, what games are we going to be discussing in the game discussion? Anyone just say, I mean, it doesn't matter if you didn't all have to play the same game. Just
I played the Battle Block Theater.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I played that one and also tried out the new DC fighting game as well.
I couldn't find the demo for that one, or else I would have tried that too.
It came out pretty late yesterday, so.
Okay. That may have been it.
All right, cool. All right, well, take a little music break and then come back to Robots Attack on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound.
Ow, ow, ow.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at Robots Attack Me. Email them at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at robotsattack.me.
Alrighty, welcome back to Robots Attack, the one and only geek-centric talk show on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound. We're going to now discuss some games we played during this week. So, what should we start off with, Caleb?
I'll talk about the one that I played, which was Battle Block Theater.
Okay, did you like it?
I thought it wasn't bad. Uh, I th- as much as I found Super Meat Boy incredibly frustrating, I found it a little bit more solid in terms of the controls than this one. Like, not that this one was bad, but okay. Every so often I find myself trying to stand on a block, or I thought I was safely out of a way of a hazard, and then the hazard annihilates me. I'm like, huh, okay. Well,
what I like about it is that it makes death a part of the game.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a bad thing to have your character die in some way. In fact, there's literally a button to have your character explode.
Mm-hmm. found that when we were almost first got them. Like, oh, I didn't know that did that. Well, there you go then.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Don't use that one unless I have to.
But it is nice for, like, if you get stuck someplace and you don't feel like heading back down or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it seems like the game was really built around the idea of making it a sort of a crowd-built video game in the long run.
Yeah.
Because every block, it's very much like the original Nintendo games, because they were all built with blocks that had different characteristics. But but you can tell that they made it really easy to throw into an editor and have people make their own stuff, which is the big selling point to the game also. It's effectively a 2D version of Little Big Planet in a lot of ways.
That's what I was just thinking as well. Okay. When I saw while watching the video at the end where they're like, see all the cool features we have, and look, a level editor. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, and it basically challenges you to drive your friends absolutely crazy and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. But also teaches you, by doing so, you will learn a lot about level design and how difficult it can be.
Yeah. The thing that I really wanted to try out that unfortunately there wasn't time to do or try and get people together for is that it's a multiplayer platformer.
Yes.
And so a lot of the different little strategies that you can use for getting through the level are from you literally like punching your friend across the screen and doing little brawls and stuff like that.
Okay.
And so...
Yeah, it's cooperative and co-competitive at the same time.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So, okay. The base line of the game is that it's a platformer, and hidden within the levels, there's somewhere in the range of 4 to 5 jewels.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go through it, and you're trying to grab all of these jewels that you can. You only need 3 of them in order to finish the level and move on. And so where I'd assume, like, the verses would come in would be the first person to get 3 of them would be able to jump up in the level, and they win. I'm guessing at that because I didn't get a chance to try it.
It seems like that would be the way it might work.
But yeah, there's a whole bunch of really fun stuff in it, though, that, like, one of the levels that I remember playing from Little Big Planet, it had a jetpack on a tether, and they basically have a jetpack in this game with no tether.
Yeah. And then they also have a pair of wings you can get at one point.
Right. Wow. It's got a bunch of extra little things like your character yelling for help and some of the creatures that are scattered around in the game will literally just walk over to see like what's going on. Then you can jump on them and ride them to do different things.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you can summon your Yoshi back to you. It's pretty awesome.
Right. And one of the things that I was really hoping to try out but didn't get a chance to is you start out with one weapon, quote unquote.
Yes.
Which is a detonating frisbee, effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And as you go through the game and you accumulate the other currency besides the little jewels is a ball of yarn, because the main bad guys are cats. So you acquire these balls of yarn, and once you get through the level, it's effectively like this prison that the cats are forcing you to play all these levels to for their own amusement and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And so your currency in getting better weapons is trading balls of yarn with the cats.
I think I like this premise.
But you need like five of them, which you it's difficult to do on two levels.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of rough that way, but it's...
But yeah, it's got a lot of the classic things that are really big right now. There's tons of customization, but they made it the, in my view, both the meanest and best way of customization is that it's like a lottery customization. So you earn a customization, but it's a random customization that comes out.
Oh, okay.
And I was happy with the very first one that I got, but yeah, it's really neat seeing all the different options. It's effectively, well, it's literally what they made it into is you have four different player characters, which have different, or five, I guess, that have different shapes of heads.
Yeah.
And so you can customize each one of those with different characteristics to those shapes of heads. And the way that you do it is you cash in these jewels at a classic, like, coin-operated egg machine, like, from way back in the day.
Okay.
And out pops, like, another inmate from those machines that you get access to playing with.
Okay.
So that's how you get the different, like, facial expressions and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's astonishingly, it's a lot of fun. Like, you know, the controls are despite my grumping about it not being where I thought I was okay, but I wasn't, that's actually relatively rare. It happened enough times that I was frustrated, but not so often that I was like, "God, this game." Yeah. So it's good fun, and I would be really curious to see how what it's like with two players or four players, because like I'm sure like you could get into all sorts of weird mayhem.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah, and the comparison to Super Meat Boy is actually kind of neat. And my, to me, is that since it's so hard and death is like this staggering thing in that, the controls need to be like the tightest controls in the world.
Yeah.
So it makes sense for that game. In this game, it's like about having fun. So
yeah, it's a little bit squishier.
Not quite
as vicious. There's a lot. In each level, there's like five or six like waypoints so you can walk over it,
right,
and then you can restart from there.
Oh, okay.
So
when you die, you sprout up in that location, like it's you warp in there.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's not the end of the world when you go down, but it's not like.
And these aren't giant levels to begin with either. It's a fairly big space, but it's not like if you were running around 40 acres or something like that.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, so, sorry, stealing the mic here. So sort of going back to Caleb's Corner and women's rights and all that good stuff. Undercurrents and the Quest for Space, an art exhibition exploring the universal concerns of women, features the works of art from more than 20 Asian American female artists. The exhibition runs from May 2nd to the 25th at the Soam Arts Cultural Center in San Francisco. For more info, call 415-252-7996 or email info@aawaa.net.
Yeah, that's Soma, south of Market.
Oh, Soma. Oh, okay. The way it looks here, it looks like Soam Arts. I apologize. Thank you for the clarification.
Who's right? Who's wrong?
No, she read it correctly, actually. That's weird.
Yeah, it's S-O-M Arts, all one word. So S-O-M-A-R-T-S.
Huh.
Culture Center in San Francisco.
There you go. Maybe they changed the name of the center since I was last there. That's
or
right.
It might just be a typo.
There's always that possibility as well.
What will it be? All right, so that was Battle Block Theater.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
What's our next?
Injustice, I ended up playing unfortunately, I couldn't play all of the characters that they provided, which was sad to me because they only provided three, but I played with two of them. And
who'd you do? Because it was Wonder Woman,
well,
Batman.
Well, I had to do Batman. I mean, I did Wonder Woman and Batman.
Okay, and then was it Lex?
It's Lex Luthor in a big, like, robotic armor suit as the third one. which I wanted to try out because, I mean, another balding guy. Makes sense to me.
Are you evil?
At times when I'm wearing robotic suits.
Is Lex Luthor really evil? Is he really evil?
I don't know. I actually don't really read anything. Anything, period. I don't know how to read. Well, anyway, as far as mechanics of the game, you can definitely tell it's from the lineage of...
Mortal Kombat?
Of Mortal Kombat, because a lot of the stuff is...
What difficulty did you set it on?
I started on medium, and it was so easy.
It was just... Yeah, they barely fought... Like, I played two matches before I came here, and I put on medium, too, and was like, are they going to fight back? Or?
Right, yeah. I finally encountered a little bit of resistance going up against... I guess Nega Batman. I don't know. The medium doesn't have any difficulty whatsoever, as far as I can tell. Hard was a little bit more difficult. I need to try it on super hard or whatever, mega hard, tetra hard. I don't know.
Tetra hard.
They have a lot of really neat ideas on the game. Like they. They stuck with a lot of the original ways of playing as far as trying to make all of these special moves, sort of like Street Fighter had them, where it's like a sweep combination or a back and forth with an action and whatnot. But they didn't do it so... they didn't do it so precisely that it makes it impossible to do that stuff, which... always ended up being my kind of complaint. Like, you'd need to play the game so much to be able to master those moves exactly when you wanted them that it kind of defeated the fun of the game. You basically had to become like a scientist of the game, which
yeah.
So they ended up throwing in a lot more extra moves in between and really easy to do interesting things. Also, like with Batman, it's really easy to throw out batarangs and have these little, like, bee drone things that end up combining with different moves. All of the moves chain with each other really well in this game, which I think they did a lot better than at least when I was used to playing Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, Mortal Kombat was not big on the chains.
Right. It also compares with Mortal Kombat because Mortal Kombat ended up having the switch to different weapon styles. Like you'd have the original stuff and then you'd be able to swap up to katanas or whatever the character's secondary weapon was. They do that again in this one, which is kind of neat.
Yeah.
The thing that threw me off, though, was they tried to make these environments really cool to interact with, and they did all of these spectacular over-the-top moves that you can do that causes you to do something with the environment. So... this one, there's a helicopter flying in the background. I wasn't concentrating on it, so I don't know if it was a news chopper, police copter, whatever.
Right.
Well, one of the moves while that thing is there is that you do, like, a really hard kick, and you kick somebody into the helicopter. They bounce off of it, and that's, like, a good 30 feet and back again that you're able to do that. Well, that makes sense with Wonder Woman. That makes sense with Lex Luthor in a giant power suit. Batman, I'm not so sure about, but it does look really cool.
He does it with style.
Right. So it's neat that they did these environments where it allows you to do all of these cool things. But yeah, I'm imagining some of the characters aren't really going to be fitting perfectly with that. Like, I can't really imagine the Flash doing like a super powerful move either. It seems like he'd do something that was more fast and tricky. But the other move that I ended up doing with Batman that I thought was really cool, but again, seemed a little off, was like really quickly grabbing a dumpster that was heaped full of stuff and smacking somebody with it.
Okay.
And they go flying way across the scene. It's like, Batman must have a way better suit than I've seen, but... And that's the other thing, too. I don't know if it's supposed to be super current DC, if it's all new stuff, or if it's the classic sort of back with the Arkham games universe, I guess.
It's pretty much a universe unto itself.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a comic series for it, so its own separate thing.
Which, from what I've heard people say, that the comics aren't very good, but yeah, it's a comics about a video game. That's kind of silly to begin with, so can't imagine it being
okay.
No,
but yeah, it's a lot of fun, but it will probably hurt your brain if you think about it too much.
Yeah, yeah, I would say good for a party. Drinking whatever you may be drinking,
mm-hmm.
and
apple juice.
You throw this game in, play with some friends. Don't take it too seriously. That's what I think this game is totally aimed for.
Yeah.
It's kind of what the Mortal Kombat versus DC was in its own way.
Yeah. See, my problem with that one was that it was so difficult to figure out the neat things in that it ended up just frustrating. Because, when you have Superman and you can't do any powerful stuff, it just feels weird, you know?
Yeah.
So I can see that.
This one does a lot better job of making you feel like that character. I'll give him that.
Because
you do neat things that make sense for that character right off the bat.
Okay. I can see that. Yeah, it probably has to do with the fact that when they did it with Mortal Kombat, they had to deal with the fact that Mortal Kombat people aren't designed to be superheroes in the way that DC characters are designed to be superheroes.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. Alrighty, well, that's been our game discussion. We're going to take another music break and then come back with the core where we're going to discuss some of our favorite heroes.
Yay!
But before that, we got another PSA.
Are you interested in free radio time? KSCU loves to broadcast announcements about local nonprofits and government agencies. Email traffic@kscu.org with information on services or upcoming events, and we will consider making an announcement for your organization. So how about some free airtime, huh?
Cool.
Alrighty.
Not too bad.
All right. Well, we're going to take that music break, then come back. We are Robots Attack, the one and only geek-centric talk show on KSU Santa Clara.
You are now entering the core.
All right, welcome back to Robots Attack, the one and only geek-centric talk show on KSU Santa Clara. We are in the core. We are discussing some of our favorite heroes. Caleb is going to start us off.
All righty. Well, I'm going to pick one of my favorites, long-standing favorite of mine, Samwise Gamgee.
Woo!
I've always liked this guy.
Any particular depiction? Like the book version, the movie version, both?
Both, actually. I think the movie distills his character down pretty well in the story, and it's very true to his character in the books as well.
Plus, perfect actor for that character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really cast him splendidly. But yeah, I've always liked Samwise. He's has that true friend loyalty and honesty that I appreciate in a character in some ways he is as much the or more the hero than Frodo, because Frodo has to carry the ring, but Samwise carries Frodo.
Oh,
yeah.
And it's
deep.
What's heavier?
Exactly.
Ooh.
So it's like we're all dependent on the people around us. And
the answer is the topic.
So. Yeah, I've always really liked his character.
Very good choice.
Thank you.
So, and from like the novel on and like the movie just cemented it, or was it like after the movie and went back, you know what, I do really like that character.
No, I even liked him back when I read the novels the first time, like in eighth grade, and then when the movies came out, I'm like, yep, that's how I remember Samwise. This is excellent.
Very nice.
Nice. It's like that and Gollum. Like when I heard Gollum, the Gollum's voice in the movie, I'm like, ah, that's just how I imagined him sounding. Awesome.
So you're saying Gollum is your hero too?
I'm just saying that the movies did not sway me much from
perfectly
my,
cast
from my original appreciations.
Sweet. All right. It all makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Jen.
Well, I wouldn't be true to myself if I didn't say Nausicaa. Nausicaa, the Valley of the Wind.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah, anybody who knows me is not surprised, I'm really sure. But yeah, I mean, I grew up on the movie before they released the good version.
Oh, okay.
Commitment, that is.
Yeah, and she was always a character that spoke to me. And then I went and read the manga like sometime in high school. And it was even more cemented because it was just what she was and then so much more of the same. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she did even more heroic things and she was very much still, you know, that, you know, serene sort of, you know, just she was the same person, but very much so. You know what I mean? It's hard to sort of describe what's going through my head.
The comics made a much more fuller vision of what you get in the movie.
Exactly, yeah. Because, I mean, it wasn't like, oh, well, that was totally out of character, or wow, you know, the movie just kind of gave you a glimpse, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that would be my pick.
Since I don't think I've seen that one, what for those who are like me out there who don't who aren't familiar with said character?
It was one of Miyazaki's first animated features. It was released in the States in, I think, 82, 83, somewhere around there, under the name Warriors of the Wind.
Yeah.
Don't see it.
Skip it. There is actually a Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind on DVD.
Yeah, that one came
that's
out.
That's the one.
That's the one to watch.
Okay.
Yeah, that one came out in about 2003, I think.
Yeah, that's when after they let Disney start casting and doing the dubbing.
Okay.
And they did and started doing it well.
Yeah, even Miyazaki was like, you know, he saw like the first American version and was like, if you are a true fan, you will never watch this one again. I mean, there are parts in it that just don't make any sense. I mean, like, she puts her head on this petrified tree and then all of a sudden there's bubbles and she's talking about something completely different. It's like, what was that about?
Oh, so it was just bad. It was bad dubbing.
Bad scripting, bad re-editing of the film. It's like someone didn't know what to do with it. And so they cut it up and tried to make something out of it. And it was
And then the
bizarre.
Second time around, she's like, oh, I can hear the water and the petrified roots. It's like, oh, well, that explains the bubbles. So, yeah, that's my choice.
That's a good one.
Thank you.
Okay, I have one that cuts across two different frequencies.
Ooh.
Oh, snap.
I like it.
I like both of them.
Oh, okay.
Equally for different reasons.
Okay.
Is Hellboy.
Nice. Nice.
The comic book, if you haven't read any of the comics, you definitely need to check them out. You've seen the movies first, you're going to be completely confused by the comics.
Just as
far as who Hellboy is. I mean, well, he's the same character, but his character is different.
the depiction is a little bit different.
Right, because it's very much like an old detective noir story, except with ghosts and goblins and whatnot, which I think is absolutely awesome. And it's really neat having the sort of interior monologues that he has as he's going through all these crazy situations, like fighting off a big frog monster that, yeah. What more can you say besides that?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really awesome art that really drew me to the series, a really cool main character. And then, of course, the movies, which I'm sure way more people have seen. If you've read the comic first and then saw the movies, again, you'd be completely confused. But still, like, it does such a good job of making a likable character. mm-hmm. which, well, I'd argue it is a better job of making a more likable character for the movies than the books does for that character.
Because the books are also about the ambiance of the story itself.
Right. But it's funny, like, I'm a huge fan of going and watching all the behind-the-scenes stuff of all these movies.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever have a chance to watch the actor's commentary for the first
yes.
movie.
Yes, very yes.
If you haven't seen it, you need to watch that.
Go watch Hellboy 1 actor's commentary. Yes. Yeah. I can. Oh, man, that was so good.
It forever cemented Selma Blair directly into my heart. For one, because she's completely and totally hilarious in a deadpan sort of way, in my view. It exposes a few interesting things, like, if you can get a chance to do any of the director and artist commentary also, because it brings up the fact that the entire Hellboy character in those movies is basically just off of the artist from the original comic and that director.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to imagine what Hellboy would be like if he were acted by the actual actor of Hellboy. And that's how that character came to be. Just his personality coming through in that character.
Yeah.
And it's awesome.
Yeah.
So I'll leave it at that. I've already talked way too much.
No
completely
worries.
Geeked out.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why I like these sort of topics. We get to geek out. All right, Joe.
Okay, this was a rather difficult topic to think about.
It is.
This will sound like I didn't really think about this, and I'll be honest, I've sort of half did and half did, but I looked at it in a different way. I went, okay, who did I think was sort of a hero for me when I was little? So mm-hmm. that's why I picked this first one.
April O'Neil.
Punky Brewster.
Okay.
When I was a little kid, I really enjoyed the show.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked that character. I think when I was a little kid, like, I had a huge crush on her, and she had a really awesome golden retriever. And so, like, mm-hmm. I wanted to go on, like, adventures with her and the dog and stuff like that. So I haven't watched any of that in, like, years and years and years. So if I go back and watch it now, I'll probably be like, oh, wow, this is pretty dumb. But yes, as a child, I remember really liking her and thinking she was really cool. So
I'm sure she's a lot of guys' first crush.
So yeah, that's my choice as a child from my childhood as my first sort of hero. Well, mm-hmm. not my first hero, but for this list thing.
Sure, like, sure.
That's my one I'm going with first, but
I'm kind of sad. I mean, I remember watching it a lot when I was little, but I mean, I am like 2 or 3 years behind you guys, so I don't remember. Yeah.
Yeah. I can kind of barely remember the show. Like, the only few kind of episodes that stick out is one that was really weird because it was like her going through some cave and there was like ghosts in it or something, and she fought some ghost, I think, or it was weird. It was like totally different than the regular show, but that's the only one that sort of sticks out.
Yeah, I don't know why. I think all of the ones that stick out in my mind are the ones that were like in a very special episode like where her, I forget who exactly the guy was. I think he actually just adopted her or something like that. But
yeah, I can't remember if it was her grandpa or, if he did adopt her,
Effectively, he ended up being, like, the grandpa-type guy, I think. But I want to say she was, like, homeless or something like that, and he ended up, like, bringing her in sort of thing. But anyway, like, when he was addicted to sleeping pills.
Okay.
That was one of
tough issues that show.
Right. I remember them really playing that up, like, in a very special episode.
Yeah.
All righty. Nice.
Yeah. So before we get to Caleb's next choice,
mm-hmm.
go for it.
Oh, sorry. I was waiting with bated breath for my intro.
Jen's going to read us a PSA.
Yay! So, talking about Punky Brewster and her pet dog, you know. So, you must be an animal lover, right, Joe?
Yes.
So, and if you're an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes and you have limited time to volunteer, you can join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving foster and forever... Sorry, there's technical difficulty over to my left here. A local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving foster and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. With your help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share your stories with your network of friends. It's easy. You can join us at sjanimaladvocates.org or look for us on Facebook.
Cool deal.
Nice. All righty, Caleb.
All right.
Before what you got next?
Oh. Before I jump in, that I've got a response from a listener saying
nice.
That they remember a giant spider in that cave episode also.
Yes!
Yeah, they totally yes. remember that one also.
Okay, nice.
I don't remember it because it wasn't very special.
It's all good. It's all good. You remember the normal troubles. I remember the supernatural troubles.
There you go.
She did many things, that Punky Brewster.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, so this one is... It goes back to when I was much younger. Okay. Spider-Man.
Okay. All right. So now mm-hmm. the question.
Yes.
Peter Parker, or Spider-Man, or the whole package. Not Spider-Man's package, but. Well, okay. I take that back. I don't want to. You know, if that is part of it. I don't want to offend. I don't want to, you know.
No,
we're not judging here.
Exactly.
No, it was the character of Spider-Man and the fact that he was also Peter Parker. Because being as you can on this show, and I'm sure you've guessed, there's a certain geekness to me. And yes, it's been around for a while. And so there was a certain amount of Peter Parker that I always could relate to. And especially, and also the desire to be something slightly more or bigger than myself, like Spider-Man, was always kind of appealing. Plus, that was one of the few comic books that my mom would actually let me buy. So it worked on many levels and for me. So I was like, yeah.
Thank goodness his powers weren't magical.
A very special Spider-Man.
Yes. The Legend of the Spider. Wearing his power bracelets from Japan, which Japanese Spider-Man was actually mystically powered, and he had a talking motorcycle.
Is that
makes
is that,
sense?
Is that the one that fired like the web looked like rope?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. That the 70s Spider-Man TV show and the Japanese one both had the rope.
Okay.
Yes. sort of bizarre that way.
Nice. All right. Okay. Yeah. I know I was a fan of Spider-Man. Well, I shouldn't say was, but definitely more as a child. But yeah, all right. Solid choice.
Okay, mine is a little bit more, I'm not quite sure how to put it. I guess a little less mainstream. One of my favorite books is The Stand by Stephen King.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I am going to go with Nick from that there story. He's the deaf-mute in... Are you laughing at me?
No, I've read the book. I know the character you're talking about.
I saw the miniseries when I was much too young, I'm probably sure. you know, and I remember being interested in it, and so I read the book in like 2000, 2001, I think.
Mm.
And then there was just this immediately like, oh, I like this character. He is really awesome. I mean, he's just totally like, you know, so he gets the crap beat out of him.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really terrible, but he comes out of it and he's still, you know, like making jokes, you know, to the people, to his rescuers and things like that. And it's just throughout this whole horrible thing, he still keeps level headed. You know, he's got a sense of humor about him and he just sort of like makes no bones about what he believes and what he does. Mm. You know, I remember, There's a scene where, you know, basically the prophet of God, you know, that everybody is in this room and everybody, you know, absolutely believes that, you know, she is, you know, the mouthpiece of God. And he just, you know, writes this note because he's a deaf mute and says, you know, I don't believe in God, you know, and everybody in the room just kind of, you know, blushes and oh my gosh, you know, and she just kind of giggles and said, you don't have to, he believes in you, you know. And I like that sort of thing where he's not, you know, he isn't, you know, the confrontational type, but he is, he's just going to, yeah, I'm sorry, but I don't.
And then she snaps her fingers and he like goes on fire and runs out there. Ah, that was pretty insane. I remember that part.
I think that was the fan fiction version you just gave there.
Do you believe now?
No, he's into different fan fiction than that.
Oh my.
But yes, I have to go with Nick. He's you know, it's my one of my favorite movies. Sorry, not one of my favorite movies. One of my favorite books, and he is my favorite character from that book. So I'm gonna go with him.
All right, cool. Okay, Super Jason, you're up.
Okay, I was gonna go with a completely different one, but thanks to a little snippet that Jen just said there, I'm gonna go with this. Shinji Ikari from Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nowhere near what would be normally a hero, but I really like that he sort of turned into one, despite him struggling against it with every single fiber of his being. I sort of enjoyed that side of the story, just because he's thrown into this really horrible situation that he doesn't really have any choice in whatsoever, and a lot of people would feel the pressure to man up and actually be a hero. He's so brave that he doesn't feel that pressure.
yeah,
I can see that.
I just really enjoyed like the sort of coming of age side of that story, because it deals with a lot of problems with parental units and stuff like that too.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of neat stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes me sad I never finished the series.
Where he actually becomes a hero.
Yeah. Yeah. I still was at the point where he was kind of a whiner.
Well, some people,
which
would,
is most of it, I'll yeah. be honest.
Yeah. Some people would say maybe it's best you didn't finish the series, but.
Yeah.
But that's for another time.
That's another discussion. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
how about you?
This will probably sound lame, but Batman.
There's nothing wrong. Is there wrong with Batman?
I know
nothing
it's not.
Wrong with Batman.
I was expecting that to be your first one, so.
Yeah.
I wanted to start off different. Okay. Like, throw people off, not what I expected. Sort of going through that same timeline of like, okay, teenagerish years.
That makes sense. That would be the next step.
Mm-hmm.
Batman. So.
Okay, so same question that you threw at Caleb. I mean, is it, you know, more the Batman, the Bruce Wayne, and the conglomeration of both?
Or the package?
Oh. Everything.
Oh my.
That utility belt. Oh.
It has everything you need.
Pretty much.
But yeah, I mean, I don't really know how much I need to say about Batman. Most people are familiar with the Batman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it is true that there are stories that it really, you know, that you have, I mean, like, blah, blah, blah. So even like the old Batman series, you have, you know, it would switch almost between which actor was playing Batman, if the focus was on Bruce Wayne or if it was more on Batman.
Mm.
You know, and it would definitely say that Christian Bale's Batman is definitely more Bruce Wayne than Batman.
I'd say it's one of the more even-handed ones.
Yeah.
See, and I'm going to do something probably wrong. I'm going to compare Batman to mine, Shinji Ikari, just because, like, if you can imagine that character, if it suddenly fast-forwarded to him being 30-something and actually being a hero, it ends up probably about the same, because they don't have comics about the years that Batman was just a whiny little kid.
This is true. Yeah. Yeah, they skip to the part that most people are interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Him, like, beating people up.
Yeah. I don't care how my ice cream's made. I just want to eat the ice cream.
Right, yeah.
So do you think we have enough time for one last go round, or?
Sure. Let's just fire it off, give it a little bit, you know, and then wrap us up.
One of my last ones is Ripley from the Alien series.
Oh, she was on my list to consider.
Yeah, I was like, I have...
Alien Resurrections, Ripley.
That one's mine.
More specifically, Alien and Aliens. Alien 3 was interesting. Alien 4 was also interesting, but different. But the character is still the character of Ripley has always been a very interesting character. She has always been
a regular person.
Yeah, and but also a person of conviction. Like especially like in Alien, you see her conviction as the person that will try and keep things going in the midst of oncoming chaos and destruction.
And I like that she isn't framed as the hero until like halfway through that movie.
Oh, heck yes!
Yeah, you can actually like see the three different acts of the story by how much of the hero is Ripley in the
right.
story.
Who is the hero for this act and this act?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that progression makes her a very interesting character to follow, and I think she's one of the better female heroes that's out there.
Yeah. All right. So on my list of number three, probably because it's really buzzing in my head right now, I'm going to choose the main character, Bo, from Lost Girl, which I mentioned earlier in the night.
Okay.
So I know that the people in the room is with me particularly aren't very familiar with the show, but it's like I said, you know, she goes through her life not really knowing what she is. And then, you know, she finds out that there's this whole fey world and there's light and dark and they both want her to join. It's like, you can't exist without an allegiance. She's like, watch me, you know?
Well, okay. I have to ask one question just because classically a succubus is a completely evil thing that feasts on the souls of men.
Yeah.
So how does it become a good character?
Okay, so and yes, she does feed on so there is that, but she's not an evil character. And basically her backstory is that, you know, she got close to a guy and she ended up accidentally, you know, sucking his soul away and went, oh, and then she ran away. And so she's been sort of, you know, feeding on the the low lives that she finds, but so she does find, you know, so there is this society of fae who want her on both sides, and it's in their best interest that she learns to control it, because otherwise she just leaves a string of bodies behind her leading them to the fae world, and they don't, you know, they obviously just want to live in secrecy and not, you know, have to be persecuted by the humans or to have to kill them. So she is, you know, she does learn how to control it. You know, she's not evil. In fact, she basically says, you know, choose light, choose dark, I choose humans. You know, so that's pretty much where her thing lies. And also, like, for the most part of the first season, she fulfills that need of feeding in other ways that I won't go into, so you guys can all just wonder. But she doesn't go around just killing people. And in fact, in the episodes that I've seen so far, the only people that get killed are the ones who are attacking her. You know, so does that answer your question?
Yeah, fair enough.
Yes, I mean, it takes a strong character to be all like, you know, the light people might try and kill you, the dark people might try and kill you, because you're not picking a side, and she just, you know, totally stands firm, and then in the meantime, she does have to make a living, because she's not, you know, just feeding on people. So she does like a, like an investigation sort of, she does a private eye sort of thing, and she ends up getting employed by a lot of fae.
Classic. Yeah, if you like that storyline, I really recommend checking out the Grimm series on NBC.
Oh, I heard about that, yeah.
Nice, all right. Well, we're going to have to wrap it up there.
Okay, wait, just one more thing, because it is sort of viewer discretion is advised with this one. There is swearing, there is nudity, it's very sexually charged, so, you know.
Wait, so, okay, so.
With a succubus?
Yeah, no. I mean, I just wanted to make that clear in case you're like, I'm going to go check this out with, you know, my kids. You know, just be aware.
Awesome. I guess now I want to watch it. Anyway, this has been Robots Attack. Thanks for listening. We are the one and only geek-centric talk show on KSU Santa Clara. We're going to wrap it up now, but coming up is the pre-funk show. You're going to want to stick around for that brand new show. So thanks again for listening, and we will be back Thursday, 7 to 9. All right, take care, everybody.
Raccoon. Veronica.